Welcome to Board Game Binge, the place where we bring you bite-sized, bingeable board game content across the industry. I'm your host, James Staley, and in this episode, we're chatting with Marvin Hegan, owner of Nerd Lab Games and one of the designers of the Mindbug IP. A standalone expansion called Mindbug Battlefruits is currently on GameFound. Marvin, welcome to the binge. How you doing, sir?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it is amazing having you here, my friend. I saw this game online. And I was like, oh my God, this looks like so much fun. I got to get these guys on here to talk about it. And not only that, we typically have, for the most part, people on Kickstarter, those type of campaigns on our podcast. But every now and then I can get one in there from GameFound. So I'm glad we can talk to somebody who's actually got a GameFound campaign running. Hopefully there's going to be some nuggets of insights we can share with our audience in there as well. Before we get started, so where are you joining us from?
I'm from Germany, so in the center of Europe.
Whereabouts in Germany?
So I'm in from Frankfurt, around Frankfurt in Germany. So that's
nice.
the biggest city around here that most people might know.
Absolutely, right in the center of the country, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And then, so you've been gaming for quite some time. Like, how did you get started into gaming? Like, is this something you've been doing ever since you're younger, or was it more recent?
Yeah, so I started playing Magic the Gathering when I was a kid, like many game designers did. So the origin journey is quite similar to some others. So when I was, I don't know, in fourth grade or so, maybe 9 or 10 years old, I started playing Magic. And played it ever since. So this is basically how I got into gaming in the first place. This is how I learned English, because we only had English cards back then, and we somehow needed to learn English
No
in order
way.
to be able to play the game. And then I got into Dungeons and Dragons pretty early. And for me, Dungeons and Dragons always was a way of creating something myself, like being a dungeon master, designing a story, or being a player and playing a character and creating a character. And I always was someone who really liked creating stuff. And at some point in time, it developed into me wanting to create games and wanting to create like businesses around it.
That's crazy. I'm going to pick a couple. So let me talk first about learning English playing Magic the Gathering. That is crazy. I always hear people like that learn from like watching TV, right? And their favorite shows or going to the movies. I had some friends when I was younger. I'm in Canada. So I had some friends that lived in the French part of Canada, which in many cases, they don't speak any English, right? So if you live in certain parts of Quebec here in Canada, you may not speak any English. And so some of my roommates in university came from parts of Quebec where they didn't speak any English, and they had learned from watching TV and watching movies and things like this. This is the first I've ever heard somebody talk about gaming being their way they learned English. That is awesome. That's a story now that I can hang on to and tell to someone else. And then you're talking about these kind of story creations and the imagination. I can so relate with that, because I remember back when I was a really young kid, and this is, I think, first generation of Dungeons and Dragons. This is back when the parents were being warned that be careful your kids, if they're playing this Dungeons and Dragons, they might lead them to, you know, doing evil spells and things like this. And, you know, it was all harmless at the time. But I remember like drawing maps and start creating characters and in that kind of imagination of kind of creating a world, right, that that your character could live in. I can totally see how that would then lead to this kind of game design bug and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating game. And I still play Dungeons and Dragons. I still play Magic. But nowadays I always also create my own games. And I've been in other industries, like the IT industry, and I never really get completely happy in it. Something was always missing for me. I was not able to create my own stuff. I was just like a little gear wheel in a big system in a huge company, you know. And I always had the urge to do something on my own and create more and be responsible for more things than just like a little bit that I have been told to be responsible for.
Yeah, when you were in IT, was it like networking, or was it along the lines of graphic design or anything like that, or?
I was working for the biggest Canadian software company, and it was basically IT consulting, so digitization in the banking area, in, I don't know, health sector, and like content management in different systems. But I was in the consulting part of it, and I was managing a small team of consultants, and yeah, working with large industries and large companies here in Germany.
It's amazing the number of either designers or publishers I've talked to over the years, where many of them have a career on the electronic side, right? Either in game design, game companies, networking, IT, and most of them say the same thing, that being around computers the entire day, getting into like games is more kind of a way to kind of almost take a break from work, right? And getting into the tactile things with hands and, physically, things you can actually touch and feel. Was that kind of some of the same case for you, or?
For me, it was something different, to be honest. For me, it was the people. It was more about the people. So
Yeah.
in the IT, industry, it's very hectic, very stressful industry, I would say. There's a lot of pressure, and there's also a lot of competition between companies. And when I got into the in the board game industry, I think it was completely different. So everyone I met was super friendly, super helpful, and that is also true for the competition. So we have been working with different publishers, or let's say negotiating with different publishers, and in the end it didn't work out because, I don't know, because of economical reasons or whatever kind of reasons, but there were no bad feelings. And instead of, I don't know, never talk to each other or being mad at each other, those other companies, they told me, hey, it's absolutely fine that you decided against us, and it's absolutely fine, and we wish you all the best, and if you need help, just call me, I help you, and if you need to produce the game in this kind of manner, you should ask this one, and this guy can help you. So it's more like helping each other and growing together instead of being like super competitive and a lot of, I don't know, politics and stuff. So I did not have that feeling in this industry, and I always felt that I was working with people I really want to work with, like almost friends all the time.
Yeah, that's so true. This is people call it the love fest here in the hobby gaming industry, but
Yes.
it really is people trying to prop each other up. And I was just talking to a former guest on an earlier episode, and they were saying that very much, that when they sign on designers, even if there's a game that that designer has that they come up with, for a subsequent game, even if it doesn't fit for them, they'll still give them feedback on the game and still say, hey, I know somebody over here might fit their portfolio. You should, let me see if I can get you talking to them. I'll introduce you. And it's very much this kind of paying it forward. And I think those in the industry that truly believe in paying it forward seem to have that right amount of karma around them, where things keep going well for them, right? And this is an industry, I think, where it is so important to try to, the kind of rising tides raise all boats, right? If the more you can kind of put it out there to help other people, the more I truly believe it will come back and help you. And it's coming from a point of being selfless, right? And if you can help
Yes.
others without really an expectation of getting anything back, but purely just because you generally want to see people do well, usually that aura or that vibe kind of emanates from you, and people are attracted to that, I find, in this industry. So it's I can totally relate with what you're saying.
Absolutely.
And then with this IP that you first started designing, this mind bug, where did that begin? Like, where did that whole idea come from originally?
Yeah, so when I at some point in time I decided that I wanted to get into the industry. So I was still in the IT consulting industry,
Yeah.
and but I knew I wanted to change something and I wanted to get into the industry. So I started a podcast back then about game design because I thought it might could be helpful to, I don't know, to talk about my process from being a gamer to becoming a game designer and a games publisher. hopefully. And yeah, I wanted to, I don't know, create some kind of audience that maybe would buy the game that I create, but also help them, because I know that there are many other people out there that maybe want to become a game designer or a games publisher, and I wanted to share my process. That was one aspect. And I also wanted to learn from other people in the industry, from like great game designers and publishers, but I thought I have better chances to get in touch with them if I have an audience and say, hey, it's not just me that I w that want who wants to learn from you. It's like me and thousand other people that want to learn from you. And I invited a lot of different game designers to my podcast, interviewed them, and tried to learn from them. And in this podcast, I met my co-designer, Christian Kudal, and we formed a mastermind group together and talked about different game ideas and tested our games and helped each other out. And I did this with many listeners from the podcast. And at some point in time, we realized that we really liked the same kind of games and thought, okay, it would be cool to make something together. And we created some design pillars that we wanted to achieve. And based on them, we decided, we basically designed the core concept of Mindbug, the both of us.
So what are some of these
That's the
pillars you're
initial
talking
story.
about? So give us an example of the pillars.
Okay, so we realized that we both like dueling card games quite a lot, like trading card games, collectible card games, and so on. And for an unknown reason, I mean, there are a lot of games out there like that, like, I don't know, Magic, Pokemon, Hearthstone, Yu-Gi-Oh, all those kind of games. And for some reason, we somehow split it exactly in the middle. I played the left part of all of those games, and he played the right part of all of those games, which was crazy because we basically had no overlap, but together we knew all of the games, basically. So our design pillars were that we wanted to create a dueling card game that is very simple to enter for new people, but that keeps the core elements of these what we really liked about those games, which is super powerful effects, building combos between cards, and yeah, having these tactical elements, this back and forth. And we decided, as one of our design pillars, to start as easy as possible. So we took what all of these games had in common, like creature cards, for example, and said, okay, we only want one card type, just creatures. And we only want to give them one power value. No attack and defense, no initiative, nothing like that, just one value. And we want to do this without a resources team system. So no mana, no crystals, nothing, no energy, nothing like that. And we completely had the idea or the expectation that we would end up with a very, very bad game, but we would have a good starting point that we can then later add stuff to make it interesting again. But for some reason, we, especially my co-designer Christian, came up with the idea of these mind bugs, which is a mechanic that allows you to steal a play from your opponent twice in a game. That's basically everything, the only thing that it does. And with this addition, the game felt in its basic form, was where we cut all the clutter from it. It felt amazing from the get-go. So we were probably a bit lucky. But that's actually how this game came to be. And then we tried over, I don't know, what's it, 6 months, we tried to put in these other things again, like these add more complexity, add new mechanics to make it exciting. But we always reverted back to initial core concept, because the more stuff we added, the worse the game became. So the initial word was really, really good. And in the end, we basically wasted these 6 months and came back to the initial version.
And then with the kind of the bug imagery, where did that is it just based on mind bug? It's like, okay, now the word matches, so let's kind of come up with a bug theme, or is that?
Yeah, so one of our design pillars was that the game should be lightweight, because it should be family friendly, attract a lot of people. So all this dark fantasy themes that I actually really like were out of scope, so we couldn't do that. And we wanted to do something that is basically reflecting this core mechanism of the game, like being able to steal a creature from the opponent. And the first thing that came to my mind was, okay, I would control this creature. I would mind control this creature. So I went through different ideas of how we could mind control something, and I ended up with some weird aliens that came from somewhere. And in the end, they became like looking a bit like a kraken or like an octopus with one eye, and they somehow mind control other creatures. And we thought, okay, for be in order to make it a bit more interesting, we don't want to use just normal fantasy creatures or sci-fi creatures. We want to have like hybrids. All of the creatures need to be hybrids in some form. And in the first sets, we had two creatures being combined, like a tiger and a squirrel, for example. And later we added other stuff, like there's a half toaster, half turtle, for example. And yeah, that's the spirit. So when people look at our cards, they often have a smile because there's a pun in the name or there's a funny combination of creatures, and that's what we really like about it.
I like you. I like how you mentioned one of your design pillars was to, strip things away, right? Like,
Yes.
what can we take away to get down to the core of, the core thing that this game is about, and then we'll add on after that. And I think sometimes you'll see designers, they kind of run into that trap where they just want to keep adding more and more and more stuff to their game. And at least in my design process, what I try to do is take away as much as possible, like you're saying, right? To then really simplify what is the core essence of this and then kind of build up from there. And it's purely from an efficiency standpoint. I find it much easier to iterate by getting down to one core thing and building iterations out from there versus, having a very, very complex idea and then trying to iterate. You're not really sure which thing you're changing is actually helping or hurting the game, right? So for me, it's an efficiency thing, but I can kind of relate with what you're saying on, let's get kind of down to the core and see what does that leave us, right? And is there a game here? And sometimes you might be surprised, right?
Yes, absolutely. We got really surprised that with how good it felt from the get-go. Yeah.
Yeah. And that first, so how many can so this is going to be your I think it's your third campaign now, is it?
Yes, it is.
How did the first two do? Like, so what, can you talk about what you guys where you finished on the first two?
Yeah. So maybe I go one step back, because when
Yeah.
we had like when Christian and I we had this game, it was really good. And at some point we had Richard Garfield join me on the podcast, who is a very famous game designer, and he's like he invented Magic the Gathering and the whole TCG genre basically that we used as our starting point. So in the podcast, one of his advice was, as a game designer, you should never stop playing other games, because that's how you learn, how you
Yeah.
get new and fresh ideas. And after the show, I asked him, hey, I mean, that's your advice, don't you want to try our game? And he said yes. And we played it on, and I had a good pitch. When I introduced the game to him, I said, okay, we have this this dueling card game, and we have a mechanic that automatically balances this game, and we can make creatures as strong as possible, and this mechanic automatically balances it, and we achieve that without the need of a resource system. And he said, this must be an overstatement. And it is a little bit of an overstatement, but that's the core of the game, basically. We have only very strong and powerful creatures. And we played the game. He was really impressed by it, and joined the design team shortly thereafter. And with him, we also got Skev Elias, who is the inventor of the Pro Tour from Magic and has been a huge part of the financial success of Magic the Gathering. And yeah, with those four, we fine-tuned the game. And first, before we started on as a on the Kickstarter campaign, that's why I tell it, we brought it to Essen Spiel, the biggest toy fair
Yeah.
in the world, basically. And we had like a small print run there. No one knew us. We were a completely new company with a game no one basically knew of. And we brought 1,000 copies and sold out on the weekend, which was a huge success for us. And for a reason I don't understand till now, we decided to run a Kickstarter campaign completely unprepared 4 weeks later, or maybe 5 weeks later. And we decided, because people were really asking about, hey, how can I get this game? And we said, okay, let's make a Kickstarter campaign. And at the fair, many people came to us and said, oh, it's so cool. This game is so cool, but it's only in English. Can't we get it in Spanish? And others said, can't we get it in French? Can't we get it in Italian? Can't we get it in Polish? And for a reason I don't understand, we decided to do it not only 5 weeks later, Kickstarter campaign, we decided to do it in six languages, which really is crazy, especially for a card game where it really matters what kind of words are on the card, and basically every mistake can break the entire rules. So that was a huge challenge for us. But with a good team, we managed to go live on Kickstarter, and the first campaign was a huge success for us. We had more than 10,000 backers, which is really, really great. It was really great for us, and without the platform and without the backers, we would never have been able to form a company around it. And I would not have been able to get into the industry and do this full time for sure.
And then why GameFound versus, so if you start in Kickstarter, what drove the decision to move over to GameFound?
So we always used Kickstarter and GameFound. So from the very first campaign on, we used GameFound as a pledge manager. So all of our customers from Kickstarter had to convert to GameFound to finish their pledge, to fill in their shipping details, choose their language, and so on. So we from the very beginning we had a good relationship with both platforms and both companies. And for the second campaign we did the very same. We all started on Kickstarter and went then to GameFound for the late pledge. And it's a lot of work to put all the data from Kickstarter to GameFound. There's oftentimes something is not working. You need to do like manual stuff in Excel spreadsheets, and some people then don't finish their pledge. You need to write them emails, reminders all the time, and of course this is error prone and so on. So we said for the third campaign, okay, all of our backers basically had to go to GameFound anyway. We can read them there on the platform. They are there, and that's one of the reasons we went to GameFound, just to make it easier to have like a campaign, pledge manager, late pledge, all in one platform. That was one reason. The second reason was that we really got a great help over there. So you get a personal project manager that helps you. And I can give you just one example, which I found hilarious. So 2 days before the campaign, she contacted me and said, okay, I went through your entire campaign. I read everything. I checked every setting. You could improve by doing that. You could, here you need to, you forgot to enter some tax information. Here you should do that. And it was a detailed list of things that we could improve and that we need to finish before we can go live. So they really care about the projects on their platform, and that really impressed us. And that's one of the main other reasons we went there.
It's certainly, I mean, it's some people are sometimes shy to go on to GameFound because they're like, oh, maybe the audience isn't as big. You're at 322,000 euros right now in your campaign with 4 days left to go. For a card game, that is staggering. Congrats on that. That is amazing. Can you talk to us about this standalone version of the game, the Battlefruit Kingdom and Battlefruit Galaxy? Can you talk about that?
Yes, absolutely. So these are two new standalone sets. That means you can just grab one of it and play it. It's completely, everything comes in one box, which is a very simple, as I mentioned before, it's very simple to get into this game. But you can also, if you are already a veteran in the game, you can just mix and match it with all the cards that we have done before to get even more replayability and more combo potential between different cards. And what we did in the Battlefruits campaign, we did not combine two creatures with each other, but we combined like a creature and a fruit or a vegetable. So we have like really great looking pineapple paladin, for example, which is right at the top of our campaign. Or we have like a lychee King, which is like a lychee that's a bit looking a bit like a lych king. So these are the kind of fun puns and things we have in the from a theme perspective in the game. And of course, we have come up with some new mechanics to shake things up a little bit. But we always try to keep the game very simple so that it feels easy to enter, but very hard to master.
And then the basic essence of how to play the game is it's just a straight up kind of Magic the Gathering type style dueling card game. Is that the best way to describe it, or?
Yes, so that's a fun aspect, fun thing. So it's basically, it's very much like Magic the Gathering, but it's also very different. So it's a bit more like Magic and chess, maybe if you would mix those two games. So what I've heard quite often is that it feels like the end game of one of those games. So for example, in Magic or Hearthstone or all of these other games, you have like a phase where you build up where like basically bad creatures clash into each other, you build up your resource system, and at some point you play these cool, flashy big creatures to end the game. So in Mindbug, you start at the end basically. You play these flashy creatures that could end the game, but your opponent might steal it from you and kill you with it. So we only have this end game basically. So from the very first turn, it feels like, oh my God, I can't beat this. And then you mind bug it, but then your opponent has an answer to it, and you have an answer to their threat, and it's like a back and forth all the time. And you only need 10 cards per player to play it. So that's all you need, and it feels like a 60 card deck in one of these other card games.
Who did your artwork? This art is awesome.
It really is. It wasn't me. It is Dennis Martinez is his name. He is an illustrator we started with from the very beginning, and he's doing all of our illustrations for the entire game, and has done already, I don't know, maybe 200 illustrations for us since we started. And my feeling is that he's only getting better and better with every artwork he does for us. And then we have a graphic designer. That's Maximilian Gotthold, who is doing all the card frames, the box arts, and campaign setups, and those two together are like an amazing team when it comes to visuals for us.
The art is, I mean, it's awesome. Like I just try to think, like, how would he come up with some of this stuff? Like the combos of some of these creatures are like the pineapple guy at the beginning I was showing on screen here is with like a pineapple sword is
Yeah,
awesome. It's just that's all I could
that one
say.
is really, really good.
And so where do you guys go from here? Are you guys going to keep going down the Mindbug IP? Is that something you're just going to kind of squeeze out as far as you can? Or is there other properties you guys are working on in terms of developing other ideas as a company? Or kind of where do you go from here? Obviously, this company is flourishing now. And I'm sure you've put some thought behind kind of what's up next.
Yes, absolutely. So, first of all, I have to say it's a ton of fun creating Mindbug expansions and sets. So, we will keep doing that as long as people are interested in it, and maybe a bit longer because it's so much fun. So, our plan is to release, keep up the release schedule like two sets per year in one campaign. So, there will be one Mindbug campaign per year. That's what we do when it comes to Mindbug. We in this campaign we also explore the two versus two mode, which I think is absolutely amazing. And in the future we could see exploring single player modes, for example, which we don't have, like campaign modes, all that stuff we don't have because the core system is so robust in this game that you can do a lot of stuff with it, and we want to explore that for sure. That's what's on the plate for Mindbug physically. Then we have a second company which is developing Mindbug Digital, because Mindbug is a game in which during your turn you have just one decision to make: play a card or use one card that you already played before. And there is basically no waiting time. So when it's your opponent's turn, they have one choice, and then it's your choice again. So it's a back and forth. So that's perfectly matched for a mobile game. So you only need 10 cards, so there's not much information we need to show, and you basically have no waiting time, and you can play a match in 5 to 10 minutes. So yeah, therefore we are working on a mobile version and a PC version since the last 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, and we are going into a closed beta phase very, very soon.
Will that
So
ultimately be a Kickstarter as well, or will that just be straight to mobile, or?
that will be straight to market. Yes. So no Kickstarter campaign for that. So that's it for Mindbug. But then we have two more games in the pipeline. We have a game that's called Agent Avenue, which will be released at Essen Spiel this year. So this is our next game. It's
Oh, no
even
kidding.
more even easier than Mindbug, I would say. It's a game that can be, it's also a one versus one, or it can also be played two versus one or two versus two. But it's again a dueling card game, but it's very well suited for couples, for example. So both players are agents living in a suburban area. You can imagine it a little bit like Mr. and Mrs. Smith style of setting, maybe.
Yeah.
But also again with not with humans, but with critters or animals. Yeah. So and you try to reveal the identity of the other person, and you do that by playing cards. Each turn you play two cards, one face up and one face down, and the opponent decides which one to take, and you get the other one. So I split, you choose mechanic, and then you try to build the best set and win either by points or by a ton of different win conditions. And that was what makes this game super interesting. There are a lot of different win conditions, and you can bluff quite a bit and need to make sure that your opponent doesn't get too far ahead on points, but doesn't get too many of the same cards to win by that, and the deck doesn't run out, and so on. So that's Agent Avenue that's coming out in Essen this year in October.
That's crazy. Well, and I hope to see it, Essen. I think we've tentatively booked a booth and got accommodations and everything already worked out. So that's
Cool.
on our list as well. So if I can make it to Essen, for sure I'm gonna swing by the booth and check out the new games coming. I want to wish you all the best on this game. This looks awesome. And for those who want to check out the campaign, I believe there's 3 days left, 4 days left. Simply go to gamefound.com. I'm also going to put a link in the show notes so people can easily just click on it and take them to the page to check it out. I'm pretty sure you're even on the main landing page on gamefound.com. If pe most people just go there, I'm pretty sure it shows up in the first at the beginning because it's doing so well.
The Pineapple Paladin is on the front, so you can't miss him.
You can't miss it. Absolutely. So gamefound.com, type it out, Mindbug, Battlefruits. Hopefully we catch you at Essen, my friend, and you enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here, James. Thank you.
Take care, buddy. Cheers.
Bye.
This has been an episode of the Board Game Binge Podcast, hosted by James Staley, produced by James Staley and Mike Bruner, with original music by Nick Smith. If you would like to watch these interviews live, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel, Board Game Binge, and you'll get access to live interviews, giveaways, and interesting board game content from across the industry. I can't wait for you to join us. See you next time.